Okay. It's my first moderating panel discussion, so I try to be professional for y'all. By show of hands, who's familiar with NWA? All right, that's a good bit. So y'all know that like within the last year or so, Straight Outta Compton came out. Has anybody seen that? So y'all are very familiar with NWA. Eazy-E, he was a founding member. He's pretty much the godfather of gangster rap. NWA, they just, what can be said about them that hasn't already been said? I mean, they created the gangster rap genre. They were polarizing. The FBI had them on their watch list because they were not even that dangerous. They were just that talented. They were that in tune to what the people of South Central Los Angeles were feeling at the time in the late 80s and early 90s. They come out of Compton, the name of the movie that is based off of their story, Straight Outta Compton, obviously. Now, I mean, y'all seem like a pretty hip crowd, so who in here has seen the movie Dope? Okay, see, now this is not gonna work. But anyway. Dope, that movie came out, I want to say, 2015. It tells the story of a young high school kid, Malcolm, who's just trying to make it to Harvard University. And it seems like a typical coming-of-age story, correct? But Malcolm lives in Englewood, lives in a neighborhood, or part of the neighborhood called the Bottoms. Englewood is very similar to Compton. They're both adjacent to South Central Los Angeles, and both of them are infamous, or famous, however you want to describe it, for portrayals of violence and the dire straits that media likes to portray Black Americans as constantly being in. But we have Seven Crowns and Noisy Tenants here today. I don't want to say they're changing the narrative about Baltimore, because Baltimore has always been a city of communities and neighborhoods and family and togetherness and just looking out for one another. I think that, you know, given context and given what media has done to our city, dirt's been shoveled on our name, and these people here are trying to, you know, clean some of that dirt off and show people that are not from here that it's not, you know, if you're from Baltimore, you know what I'm saying. So I'll be moderating the panel discussion today. I'll be fielding questions of all of y'all. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I'll sit down and I'll see everybody else to sit. So the first question I have will be for Seven Crowns. It'll be for both of y'all, but how did y'all get started, Seven Crowns?
Hello. I'm Siobhan. So Seven Crowns got started because, well, we're artists first, we're filmmakers and photographers, and after the uprising, we decided to start the documentary project that Will mentioned, and very quickly into an overambitious project, you realize you need funding. And how do you fund your art? Well, there are many ways that people go about funding their art, but we decided that we wanted to try something, a different model, and we started our own business, which is Seven Crowns. And it was really just a combination of our skill sets kind of being utilized, but the main thing was strategy and production. And if we can create a solution to our own problem, then we can create a solution for other people, other artists in our community who may be dealing with the same problems, which is funding or money or not being a starving artist. And so the Seven Crowns was born. The documentary was started, but it wasn't completed. And in the process of starting Seven Crowns, it's taken many shapes, but the main thing that we realized is that we really just wanted to create sustainable models so that we can be self-sufficient individuals and at the end of the day. No matter who's doing what, if we are part of a project, the main goal is to set it up so that it's sustainable without intervention or funding from other entities.
And Noisy Tenants, post-graduation 2009-2010, we started off as 3C Productions. So focusing on film and theater was what we really were hanging our head on. We kind of went into the world of theater. We were doing productions in DC and Baltimore, New York, New Orleans, and Texas. Doing really well in it, but we realized that it wasn't something that we could do sustainably. and kind of just replace our full-time jobs with, and something we really didn't 100% able, we weren't able to really hone in on what we were great at. So we had an opportunity to work with a nonprofit, the Coben Foundation, which is based in Lyndhurst Elementary School, focused on literacy and pretty much helping youth K through three higher their reading levels. We actually worked with them to create a arts portion to their program, turning children's books into plays. That was something that took, we would work with 60 students, 30 on Monday and Wednesday, another 30 on Tuesday and Thursday, and we prepared them for a production that would happen in January and one in June. That was the start of us kind of giving back to the youth and kind of really taking our creative side and applying to youth. Shortly after that, we were able to get a connection with Mervo, and that's when like, the entrepreneurial side really started jumping out and really us getting to tap into students, their skills, and getting to leverage that of their abilities to kind of give back and then grow businesses and kind of create their own kind of ownership. So from there, the Greenmount West Community Center connection kind of came in. I'm going to let them kind of jump in and hold it on.
Yeah, so we got into Greenmount West, and that started off as this opening up a community center that was not being utilized in Greenmount West, and just myself, Keisha Webster, LaShawna Jones, we came together to essentially open up this space. And then when we were opening this space, we said we want to bring in folks that are great at what they do and can give back to the youth in our neighborhood, because the whole purpose of opening this center was we needed to invest in our youth very quickly, and there was an urgency that was coming with that. So we opened up the center, launched it in March, which allowed us to have this platform or this infrastructure to bring in a Seven Crowns, to bring in a Noisy Tenants, and really get to the work.
Okay, and I'm sorry, did you want to add something? Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
So, and this is like, this relationship between us has been brewing for the last 2 years. When we first came into filmmaking and things like that, we met Nick. They met, Montier and Nick met on the gram, because that's where people meet people. And we sat down and we talked about what was the treatment of what the project is called. It's called Thug Myth Project. And the whole purpose of the project was to debunk the myth around the youth that were a part of the uprising, or really just the people that were a part of the uprising and what it was actually about for them. And pretty much every project that we've had on one side or the other, we've all worked on it together. And the whole point has been to create a model where you can have your, because you know, everyone wants to have their own thing. Like, you have a business, you back there, everybody has a business. But how are we able to actually use our businesses together so that we can all capitalize and be better together? It's not always about, you know, your name is on something or your name is the thing. It's how can we all do it together and we all get something from it? And in the process, how do we affect the community that we exist in positively? And so, you guys went down the timeline, so I felt like I should go down one too. So yeah, we started the Thug Myth Project. We worked with other small businesses or entities in Baltimore, and the one that I love to mention the most is Sankofa. If anybody is familiar with the store on 25th and Charles Street, they were closing a couple of years ago. And we went in and we were just like, hey, you know, what can we do? How can we help you? And one of the biggest things about Seven Crowns is always being of service to other people. If we can profit from it, that's great. But the main goal is like, really, what don't you have that we can give you? And how can that be useful to set yourself up? And so we did a 3-month residency with Sankofa. And in that 3 months, we re-merchandised the store, we created content, we did all that, you know, kind of fluffy stuff. But the most important thing was this pop-up museum that we created. And it was called Sankofa, which means to go back and get it, and it was for Black History Month. So instead of getting the information that we normally get in Black History Month, let's just take a visit to Africa. Like, let's see what that's about, maybe. And we used the Living Well as the space in which we curated a children's museum. From that small seed, which was just a 3-day
to class because we invited schools from Baltimore City, second grade classes to come. They had an hour and a half session. And from that small seed, now Sankofa, instead of closing, is also working to open a children's museum.
That's awesome.
So small things, like how can, and we did that on a very, very, very small budget with this very, very small team, using whatever resources we had to pull it into that one space for that one week. And so small things turn into bigger scale things when we're able to do it together.
That's fantastic. I've been to Sankofa before, and you guys be able to turn it around for them and breathe new life into the organization. That's very impressive. Before I move on to the next question, Montia, did you want to add anything? Okay, so with all the collaboration that y'all are doing together, and y'all just been running in the same circles and kind of orbiting each other throughout your entire process, have y'all ever considered just forming one big company?
Well, you know, you get a company, you get a company. I don't think it's necessary. I think everyone, because we have different interests and things, you know, outside of the fact that Seven Crowns does this thing, we're also, again, artists ourselves. And so we have different projects that we want to work on and do that aren't necessarily related to the work that we're doing together, and that's okay too.
But we have projects that we take on together that are big projects, so it's not like we have to all come together under this large umbrella. We can work together and leverage each other's skills, absolutely.
I think it's a lot of beauty in collaboration also, because like we're kind of in the same space, but we also have like our own niches, and so it's really cool when we're able to go into a space, Seven Crowns, and then also bring in those tenants, and then likewise, and then, you know, us just being able to work together and learn how we all have our different skill sets and how we can thrive together to create great impact. I think that's just where we are right now.
And the current dynamic also allows us to be critical with each other, allows to have conversations that you may not want to have with your business partner, or maybe tough to have. They're able to come in as an outside party sometimes and really tell Nick and I, hey, that's not going to work, but this needs to change, or that's not realistic, and vice versa. So I think us kind of operating this way allows us to really tap into everything we can do and kind of max out.
So you think that collaboration, while it removes a certain level of professionalism, it maintains the creativity and respect?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, all right, good. All right, so Noisy, this next question is going to be for you. Y'all have a lot of initiatives that are benefiting the community. Can y'all talk about Bus Stop Buddies, Noisy Lemonade, and Noisy Burger?
Yeah, so I'll start with Bus Stop Buddies. It was started by Keisha Webster, we have a bus stop, Barclay and Pittman, and we had this meeting a bit ago where that ultimately said that we need to invest in our kids. So part of that was saying we need to go out to the bus stop with them in the morning. We need to spend time with them. We need to dialogue with them. We need to see what's going on in their lives and just build that relationship essentially. You know, right when I started to dive deep into this work, I kept on getting invited, you know, come out to Bus Stop Buddies. And it's just been something where I started to go out there, we were out there, and there was days where, you know, last year the bus, it just wouldn't come sometimes, or it would come 10 minutes late, so it started to become this thing. Now we're gonna walk our students to school at a certain time, and the bus doesn't come because they're not getting to school on time. Or we're gonna make sure that they get to school so that they can get their breakfast. That was last year. This year, we're really making an effort to get the statistics on it. You know, we're tracking the bus time. What time does it come every day? We wanna know, how does it affect grades? How does it affect, you know, behavior? So we're really using it as a platform to see, like, how does the start of the day really contribute to the trajectory? Noisy Lemonade, these were all kids in our neighborhood anyway, so very interested in entrepreneurship. The question was, you know, what are the options for 6 to 13-year-olds as far as a business goes in their community? The ones that I've seen, you just have drugs, nothing, still in packages. So now it's like, how do we take this energy and put it into something, you know, simple that they can learn from? So, you know, lemonade stands are your first business, essentially. So we said noisy lemonade, and it's kind of been it's evolving at all times. You know, we're really trying to push financial literacy. When kids come and they work with us, they need to have a bank account. It's not acceptable for them to be going and cashing their checks at liquor stores anymore. They need to understand how that works. You know, eventually we're building creditors. Like, just really dive deep into not just the lemonade. Oh, that's what I'm excited about, but I also realize everything else that comes with it that needs to be taught as well. And I'll let Chris kind of talk about Noisy Burger and how we got there.
So Noisy Burger started at Mervo. If you guys are familiar, it's a trade school, about over 25 trades, things ranging from cosmetology, electrical construction, masonry, carpentry, culinary arts, commercial baking, and it goes on. We were able to have access to 12 of their commercial baking seniors. They had a last period that's work study. The teacher informed us that she didn't really have anything planned for them during that period, and then she kind of invited us to come in and kind of take over and do what we wanted to do, which is great. We had a meeting with the principal and kind of pitched this very lofty idea of something, and he kind of said, if you guys want to give it a shot, give it a shot. So we did. So every Monday and Thursday we'd be at Mervo from 1:35 to 3:00 and kind of starting that process. It started off very, very minuscule. We didn't really know what it was going to be. So we essentially started off with building relationships with the students. They made it very clear that they had to trust us in order for this to work. We came in asking them these lofty ideas. What do you guys want to do? What do you guys want to accomplish this year? And by the end of the day, they were like, are we really going to do this, or are we just talking? So Nick and I took that as a challenge. We used homecoming as our way of kind of getting through the door with them, and that was talking to them about homecoming had been the same thing for them for 3 years prior to this, and they wanted it to be different. So we asked them, what do they want to see? They said they wanted to do an outdoor movie night. So we kind of talked through the process of what that would look like, getting it approved by the school, and then logistically, you know, finding a vendor, identifying all the electrical needs, security, concessions, all that fun stuff. Drafted an email up, reached out to the principal, and they approved us for that Friday to do the outdoor movie night. So that was the start of the process. And then from there, we built out, you know, how do we find a movie to show? So they decided to do a Twitter poll for 4 movies, and pretty much working through the entire process to get to the actual homecoming day to do the film. It was a great success. About 300 tickets were sold. They worked concessions. They managed the entire project security and everything. We had a drone flying, getting footage, so it was great. That was the start. After that, they believed, they loved us. They were like, hey, these people are real. They're talking. They didn't just come in and tell us a dream. So from there, Nick and I said, how do we leverage what they've been doing here for 3 years and take it to the next level? And that's commercial baking. And so we mentioned around the same time our house was about to open, Nick actually came across the website and reached out kind of cold to Stephanie at our house saying, hey, you know, working with some commercial baking students at Mervo, and we want to find a way to max out what they've been doing. So she gave us a tour before they opened up. We kind of pitched the idea of saying, hey, what would it look like for us to do a pop-up here? She said, hey, I would love it if we can make it work. Nick and I knew that we kind of could do it, but they didn't know. So after winter break, we kind of came back to them and said, hey guys, are you interested in going to a restaurant? They said, yes. We're like, all right, well, let's see if we can get in. So we kind of broke them up into 4 groups. Each group was tasked with presenting a 5-slide deck of a restaurant. So each restaurant came back. We had 4 different options. There was a pasta restaurant, there was a burger restaurant, there was a deli, and then there was a hot pocket restaurant. Too much sauce was pasta. Drop top, sub shop was the deli. Put it in a pocket was the hot pockets, and Burgers For You was the burger spot, which eventually became Noisy Burger. And so once we identified, we had people come in, the teachers were there, the principal was there, so kind of as they pitched the ideas, we kind of narrowed down what made sense. If you guys don't know, like at our house, the restaurants have like exclusivity to their dish, so certain pop-ups can't sell tacos at our house because there's already tacos, but you can't sell chicken because there's already chicken spots. So we kind of had to use those parameters when we were building it out with them. And once we decided Burgers was the best one, we kind of took it to the next level, which was like, okay, what does the menu look like? And you know, it needs to be made in 5 to 8 minutes, it needs to be quick. It needs to be efficient, it needs to be good. So we kind of went through, we brought in flavor testing, we figured out what sauces we use. We had to identify where we get the beef from, wanted to be local, we wanted to be fresh. We decided to use Rosetta beef, which is local and great. We also wanted to do fries. Originally it was, let's do fresh cut fries. And that sounded like a great idea until we learned what the process of fresh cut fries looked like. And so we were like, let's kind of, and this process actually happened through dialogue. We let them present it and we would talk it through. Like, let's figure out, you want to be fresh cut fries? Let's do it, let's research it. They would come back and then we'd say, hey, is that realistic what we're trying to do, what we need to accomplish throughout the week? And so that kind of started the whole thing. We got to April 26th from there, and we didn't realize that on that Friday we could make the cover of the Baltimore Sun, and that really kind of took, made it kind of go crazy. We blew our entire inventory that day. our butcher's closed on the weekend, so we had to plan for the weekend. We didn't plan on the cover story. So that was another learning process. So by that Friday evening, we only had about 100 burgers left to get us through the weekend. So we had to figure out what is the fix for this. It ended up being, we had like a little team meeting afterwards that night, and it kind of came up with, is there any other way we can get bulk burgers? One of us, I went and got a Sam's Club account, which was the consensus was Sam's Club account. We bought cases of fries, cases of burgers.
Solving problems,
exactly. So I really, in that situation, it was kind of give and take. We did leverage our the quality of our product, because we couldn't have Rosetta Beef that weekend, but we also didn't want to shut down. So in those conversations, we talked it through with them. And that's the idea of the program is saying, hey, let's take what you guys have been working on in theory for 3 years, let's implement it and then learn from it. And then also at the end of it say, hey, this can be yours. Today, Noisy Burger still has legs. People still want it to be places, still want it to run. And we also offered an opportunity to the students who went through to still be a part of it. And if they want to see what the next levels of it are, we're open to seeing them through that process as well. So.
And we were able to donate $1,500 to Green Mile West Community Center for that, which is really cool.
It seems like with those initiatives, every step of the way, there was no like hubris involved. It just all seemed very selfless, and at every step of the way, you're just making sure that the decision that you were making, I mean, of course, they were the best for you guys, but also the best for the consumers and the end user. My next question, I have Montier and Siobhan lead off with this. How did you come up with your name? Because Seven Crowns sounds very regal. Noisy Tenants, I've never had tenants, but I've had noisy neighbors, and they drive me insane. So I'll start with y'all. How did you come up with the name for Seven Crowns?
So crowns is just synonymous with royalty, and we're both women, and we see ourselves as queens. And the number seven, there's a lot of just symbolism with the number seven in my family and my life, and Siobhan's. My life path is number seven. So just, you know.
What is a life path number?
So it's basically like numerology. So you use your birth date, your birth time, and then you add all those numbers up where you're born. And once you add those numbers up, you get to a single digit. So if you have like 13, it will be 1 + 3, and that'll be 4. So like my life path number is 4, hers is 7, and so Seven Crowns.
Okay, understandable. So Noisy Tenants, how'd y'all come up with your name?
So we came together and played productions, and it started off as apartment. It was our partner's, his company was Apartment 3C, and we all kind of came together and were like, it's a little too personal, we're gonna be Noisy Tenants. so we can still keep the house, the theme going. It's kind of evolved from that. Now that we're in communities, we're in schools, Noisy Tenants is, we don't see noise as a bad thing necessarily. If you walk past the class and it's noisy, that means some ideas are being shared. That means, you know, people are talking, they're communicating. Whereas traditionally, noisy is a bad thing. So we're really trying to own the word and
change the context.
Change the context. Yes, yes. So Noisy Tenants is growing. The rooster is the logo. It just all started to come together. You know, early bird gets the worm. That type of deal. So Noisy Tenants.
Okay, gotcha. That's great. Now this next question will be for both of you. What was it like, or what was the process behind developing the your very own film festival and having it take place in the Charles Theater? Was that Noisy or was that Seven Crowns?
So I knew I always wanted to do a film festival, and we had always talked about it. So I was walking by the Charles Theater one day, and I asked them, can we reserve the space? And then I brought it back to the team and was like, let's figure this out. And we went from there. I knew I wanted it to be community-based, tell stories, and that was kind of the rough theme, and then we went from there as a group.
Yeah, it was a natural kind of thing, seeing as how we're filmmakers, so of course, let's do a film festival. But it was interesting because the first day, the first version of our film festival, the first day, was something like a disaster. But we took it in grace. The films, like technical difficulty, things like that. And we were also screening a film, so we were kind of just sitting in the audience when Nick decided, like, we're just gonna pull the plug this day. So we did it again a couple months later or sometime later, and it was actually really good. And the films that we showed were pretty much mostly all community-based films. People who are local to Baltimore or from this area. And it wasn't even a planned thing, but the thing was kind of centered around the work that people do in the community. So the pizza tour, pizza party tour, the work of Bus Stop Buddies, our film, Long Number Love, which is a film about the Cherry Hill community and what's going on there in the community center. And so that theme, I guess, is kind of what Will was attracted to, because he was also there and asked a very good question in our Q&A.
Now, when you're talking about the film festival, you mentioned that one of the days, like, there's a lot of technical difficulties and use the word disaster. What was it like just moving through that, and in spite of those setbacks, just carrying it on and trying to put out that product? Because I know that it can be difficult, especially for a creative, because you have an idea of what you want in your mind, and you're just like, it has to be perfect. And then when it's not, you're just like,
yeah. In this process, I've learned to just be really nice to myself. You know, things happen, and it wasn't ideal. It wasn't what we wanted. We were very disappointed. I think you might have been the most disappointed.
I was extremely disappointed. But what it was for me is that I didn't want to present somebody else's work in a like the sound was off. It was just like, you worked hard on this. I don't feel comfortable presenting it in this manner. So we're gonna pull it and we're gonna do it right.
Okay. Now, I want to move on back to the topic at hand, which is context. And I want each of the camps to talk a little bit more about what y'all are doing to improve and change the idea of context about Black Americans and Baltimore, because Baltimore is a predominantly Black city. So what are y'all doing to help change that context?
Wow. Well, first and foremost, I know for Seven Crowns, it has been completely circled around storytelling. Making sure that we're giving people opportunity and space in whatever form that may look like to be who they are in their own truth, right? That comes for us in image making, in filmmaking, in production, and when we produce, making sure that we're producing an event that's for us, by us, or including us in some kind of way. I think with the work that we're doing in Greenmount West currently, with the BMA, the Greenmount West Community Center, Mark Bradford, the artist, that just kind of took us to another level with how creative we can get in creating our own models of success within the community, for the community.
I think for me it's definitely access. It's, you know, the context. It's working with these young people who, you know, on apps such as Nextdoor, they're very quickly debating how they can call the police on them, or what they're doing wrong, or having a meeting with 60 people and, you know, a very small number wanting to do something about it. So it's saying, okay, come on in, let's build this relationship, and let's find out what you're great at, because they're all great at something, they all are interested in something, all the youth, and let's hone this, let's put it in a direction, and let's, you know, build bridges and connect the dots and figure out what we can do as a community.
I think it's important to know that we're artists first, and so whenever we able to go into spaces and create an imprint, it's kind of like our canvas. And so that looks like our micro businesses, our sustainable solutions that we're creating for physical spaces. And so with that, you're able to kind of create value, and you're understanding like who you are as a person, and you're starting to think about your narrative, and you're starting to be empowered by yourself. And so all of those things are used to shape the narrative, and we want people to be vocal about it. We want people to share who they are, we want people to own who they are and own their communities. And so for us, that's the main goal.
And also taking that and identifying what they're great at and being able to pour resources into that to grow it, and eventually taking those resources to grow that skill, that path, that passion, and allow them to use it to become better people themselves.
And I wanted to say, you know, it like feels really cool to sit here and to kind of just gloss over everything, but this is not necessarily easy work. People work is not easy work, because you're not just coming in and saying, oh, we have these great ideas and we want to like push go on it and make it work. Before you can even do the work, you have to deal with the people. What do the people need? In this instance, we're working with youth, and we're working with youth who live in a low socioeconomic environment. And so that comes with a bag of challenges, and you don't know which challenge hits what person in what way on what day. And so physically being in the community center Monday through Thursday from 3 to 6 p.m. feels like being there for 8 hours, because you have all these little people and little personalities, and they need to be heard, they need to be given affection, and they're tough. And this is the thing that scares people from coming into that space and being consistent with them every day. And so that's the work, really. Before we even get to the programming, before we get to, you know, all the high level stuff, that's the work. Is how do we even, you know, just going into Merville, it took them some time to get high school kids to trust them. These are tough kids. These are like, no, you're gonna work for this. And so that changes you, that humbles you, that makes you more flexible and more open and empathetic and aware. And when you can do that work first, it makes everything else much easier.
Absolutely. We're gonna open it up for Q&A from the audience, but everybody just give Seven Crowns your chance to wrap it up. Much for this opportunity. Really quick before I start the Q&A, Will Welker, he is my guest for my Local Color podcast. He's the 50th episode. I didn't think I would make it that far. You know, find it on podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, however you get it. So we're going to open the floor up for question and answer round now. Anybody has any questions? Should we give her the mic?
I can probably yell. Thank you both for your presentation. Your journey was really interesting to hear. I'm interested in hearing more about your process for funding. How is it that you have the funding and time and energy to spend the amount of time that you do in community centers?
I just had a deja vu. That is so crazy. You raised your hand and you asked that question. I feel like I didn't have an answer. The first two, again, Seven Crowns started Seven Crowns to be able to fund ourselves. To not only be able to fund ourselves, but to fund our art, but to fund our lives. Because in order to do this work, I can't work a full-time job for someone else unless it's related to the work that I'm doing. So I've been very fortunate to be compensated for some of my time in Green Mountain West, just in terms of providing programming. Even though I'm there and I'm compensated for that, I'm doing a million other things, because what needs to be done trumps what sometimes is the purpose of being there. So that all those little things help. When it comes to partnerships and such, working relationships help the resources that they're able to bring to you. Everything isn't always money, like solid hope, you know, money, cash, or anything like that. Sometimes it's just resources and network and people bringing in things to help push whatever it is you're doing further.
For us, it's kind of been self-funding to start, identifying projects and then saying we're going to need this much money and kind of going out and finding it, whether it be in our own pockets or tapping a family member or just people and saying, you know, we're going to give you the business, saying we're going to give you this much percent back on it. Most recently, I've been able to do this, like full-time really dive in as part of a fellowship with Baltimore Core. So they've allowed me to create a position in Green Mountain West where I can really focus and say this is the work that I want to do and just get to it essentially. And not have to worry about the day-to-day of paying those.
So one of the things that we're Seven Crowns, there's like, you know, like risk and reward affiliated with success, right? And so for us, our thing was to create a portfolio. And like Shimon shared earlier, we started with Sankofa. And that was a 3-month like internship, like a volunteered experience. And that was to create value for them, but also to find out what our value was. And once you find out what your value is, you're able to create a portfolio, and then you can start to move that portfolio, you know, sell it, and then create more business for yourself.
Yeah, very similar to what Montero was saying. A lot of stuff that Nick and I were presenting, a lot of people hadn't ever seen before or knew how to even budget for and didn't know where that money was coming from to pay for this thing. They didn't know what it was. So it's very similar. We kind of just did stuff to build a portfolio and pray that it would bring money back or at least have us break even to not feel like we were in a hole. And from that, we were able to do a Noisy Burger and do well and be able to, on the back end, somebody look at that and say, wow, these guys did great things with pretty much nothing, and what could they do with a little funding? So that's kind of how it kind of all came back around for it.
Exactly. Also, like, money is not the motivation. It is great, you know, it changes lives, but it's not the motivation, because when you go into a situation with that mindset, you automatically sabotage it, literally. So you have to go into it like, I'm here to do the work that's necessary. The money will come, and the money always comes.
When you just look at money, you limit the possibilities around what can actually happen, because you can work on a project and you can meet all the people that's going to help you for the next year. You know, like mentor you, help you, lead you, guide you to the actual, you know, money that's going to help sustain you to live, but also the opportunity that's going to help you thrive and make a bigger impact.
My business partner has a line, putting people on, and we had a very in-depth conversation in LA about what that meant. And I think all of us had kind of our own thoughts on what it was, but the kind of consensus was almost just like, how do you pour into somebody? And so it's not always like, you know, take this and run with this money or this check, but it's almost like, hey, open this door for me so that I can move on and see what's next.
Does anybody have any other questions? We'll start with you first.
Are you guys gonna do the film festival again?
It's in planning stages.
So yes, it's in planning stages. Right now we're just really trying to figure out exactly how it's going to happen with all the work that we have now. And so yes, it's in planning, and hopefully we'll have more details for you guys soon.
Yeah, but I just want to end up with that.
I'm just curious, I always love the personal narrative behind it. I would love to hear from each of you, that one moment, that one golden moment where a kid said something or time stood still and you were like, I am doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mine was early on in the mural process. When I mentioned about getting the trust of the students, one of our students, her name was Story, and we spent the entire day just asking them questions about, you know, let's list out all of these ideas you guys want to do. And she was just so disconnected the entire day. And I was really wanting her to be a part. Like, everybody else was pretty good, but I really wanted her attention. So by the end of the movie night, she was so like a part of this process. Like, you know, this is real. Like, you guys are about your thing. Like, you guys really told us something, and we walked through this process, and now it's real. So I think in that moment, I realized, like, okay, this is something that, if we, even though we're going to have some pushback, like, this is really where it's at. And as long as we do our part, it'll work out. So that's good.
My app is on a daily basis. shout out to Jules. So, you know, Jules is one of the students who's at Bus Stop Buddies with us, and that I've kind of been trying to develop a relationship with. So, you know, every day I'll ask Jules to do something, and he'll fight me on it. And then I'll say, you know what, all right. And he'll be like, okay, Mr. Nick, I'll do it. And it's like, it's just that moment where it's like, all right, cool. Like, you get that I'm trying to, you know, benefits you. You might want to do this song and dance with me for a minute, but you're gonna get with it and you understand what it is that I'm trying to do.
I would agree that they happen pretty often. So being in this position, I'm oftentimes aloof to the magic of it all until they like hit you in the face. And you're like, oh, I just did that? How, right? And the first thing I thought about was Sankofa. Okay, so literally a month before the actual pop-up exhibit or museum exhibit, it was just the idea on a piece of paper. And I said, this is what I'm gonna do. And at the time, we were all still very scattered because this has been a process of getting to this polished version of ourselves. We've been figuring it out as we go. But when that happened, it was much less communication. It was more like, I just need you to do that. And like, this is all in my head kind of sort of. So when I put it on paper and I realized, okay, this is something I can do. This is the work involved. I sourced the materials. We got a short, very short, small budget to do it, which was our money. And then to go and make it happen and then see it come alive and then see the first yellow bus pull up and the kids hop off, it was like, what? This is crazy. They're here. And then to get through the first hour and a half, like, and the teachers loved it and the parents who were there, chaperones loved it, and them wanting it. It was now, we want this. How can we do this again? It was like, oh, you really like this? This was just a silly idea. Like, I didn't even know it was gonna actually work. It's like moments like that kind of, you know, just change the game for you. You're like, okay, I'm on mission. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And so being in the community center now is kind of the same way. I mean, I thought I knew what I was doing, and then I realized, like, I'm going to actually learn a lot more in this process than I'm going to give, probably. And they're going to teach me. They're going to teach me what I need to be doing next. And, you know, I remember when we first came into the center, and they would not deal with me at all. And then there's moments where they run up to me and give me a hug, and it's like, you like me? you like me today? Like, okay. And so, you know, I guess it's those moments.
For me, I think the topic is really consistency right now. And so when Shalon and I first started out, we were both independent freelancers. And so we sat down and realized that, okay, our skill sets actually work better together as opposed to working independently. And so then I was one person on the team, you know, so it's solid. And then I met with Nick, and the thing with me and Nick is that it was so happenstance. And then like us just hanging out and just meeting consistently, talking through our ideas, really putting a plan together for how we want to start moving. And then Sankofa and being able to plan to see with the pop-up museum, and then seeing Miss Esther actually like take that over. And not only is her business now thriving still, she's also working on opening the Children's Museum. And so just being able to see that the little work that we're doing is actually being just so impactful, like so electric for a lot of people, that's the thing that really keeps me going. And then also like the Scream Out West project, the kids just show up every day. They just keep coming back. And so that's just a testament that something is going right. You know, they're looking forward to us being there. They're look, you know, even though some days can be a bit challenging, the end result is that they come back the next day. And that's really, really good.
Yeah, I heard you mentioned your collaboration with Mark Bradford. I was wondering if you could just talk a bit how that project sort of happened and what it's going to look like.
So, I'm going to start. It's still developing. We're still figuring out what that looks like. As far as how it happened, they came into our community. His team reached out. We brought them into the center, and they really were feeling the vibe. They vetted us. They looked to see that we were really about the work that we were doing, and you know, we checked out, and then the relationship started to grow from there, and it's still growing. We're still determining exactly what it looks like and how it'll move. We just got back from that's where we were. We were seeing Mark Bradford in his studio as well as his foundation, Art in Practice, which is amazing. He's doing great work in Lemon Park, and we're just trying to use each other as a resource. I want to learn as much as I can from them, and it's developing right now, essentially.
And you have a question?
Yeah, you guys are great natural disruptors. Have definitely kind of shown that you guys create and own your own narrative. Can you guys speak to the approach that you have with your youth around creating and owning their own narrative going forward?
I'll start. So in programming, in our space, it is very much driven by what they are passionate about. So, you know, Keisha will sit down with the kids and playing Play-Doh, and they'll be, you know, making food. So now we know we need to have food programming in here. We brought them here to they laid a rap track. They did a rap song, and we're like, okay, we need to get some music programming there. So it's paying attention to them, it's having conversations with them, it's building relationships so that we can know who they are on an individual level, as you know, and that kind of forms where we go with everything.
And to piggyback off of that, we realize too that sometimes a lot of these youth have never been asked like what they want, and then had it be reciprocated with actually it happening or seeing a version of it. So it's really tapping into them and having them be able to just tell us what they want to see, what they expect, and then kind of piggybacking off, kind of coming behind that with things that look like that and really small stuff. Like they were like, we want snacks. I'm like, okay. We'll bring snacks, and the next time there's a session, there were snacks there. So, wow, we asked for something, and we got it, and that's very small. But then you slowly kind of throw things in that require work to get what you want, and it kind of just started building on itself.
I guess in terms of showing children or the youth that's in the community center how to own their narrative, I feel like it, for me, is less about programming or giving them what they want in that regard, but kind of giving them language to the things that they want, like owning your narrative in that way. So when we're all together, I have like a set that I call my Golden Girls. And they all like went home and chose which character they were of the Golden Girls. But then they do mean things, like they'll exclude somebody because she can't be a part of the Golden Girls, like it's already set. And so then we have a conversation around changing that narrative, like what does that mean? Like why can't this be something else? Like why can't we decide to add another character, or why can't we decide to not be mean and exclusive, but figure out a different language to be used in those moments? So I feel like that's my contribution to narrative changing in that space sometimes.
Thank you.
We're gonna have to wrap it up. That's our time. But once again, I want to thank everybody for coming out, and I'll hand it back over to your host, Will Walker.
All right, everybody, please give another huge round of applause for the panel and the moderators. Once again, thank you for everybody that's on our panel, our moderators, for being a part of this experience. You're now alumni, so please spread the word about Creative Mornings, you know, what we try to bring to the table. And again, we'll try to continue to post about what the work that you guys are doing in the community. But again, continue to keep doing the amazing work, you know. A lot of people say, I wish I could do this, or I wish that I did that, but you know, all you have to do is just get up, stand up, and do it. So thank you for being people that are leading by example. Thank you so much. to you, the crowd, thank you guys again for sticking with us. You know, we've been going through a lot of transition with leadership, growing and things of that nature, different experience in different locations. Thank you so much for being a part of this 3-month residency here at the Motor House. Thank you for spending your time with us on a Friday morning. Guys, we want you to, if you are already following us on social media, please continue to do so. If not, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Baltimore_CM. And I think that's about it. So stay tuned for what we're going to post next month and for the next month's topic. Stay tuned for all of the, again, the amazing work that's done here by our panel. Jason, our moderator, again, what we'll be posting here for Motor House in the upcoming future. And again, thank you for being a part of the Creative Mornings community. Enjoy your Friday and enjoy the rest of the weekend, guys.
Noisy Burger.
Yes.
Next Noisy Burger is Thursday through Sunday. So please come and support. We're looking. Thank you, Keisha. next Noisy Burger is Thursday through Sunday. Please come. Please come support. We're trying to raise, I think, $15,000.
What's the date exactly?
Thursday, the 20th through the 24th.
Where?
At our house in Remington, in the pop-up store. We're trying to raise money for a computer lab in the community center. So. All proceeds are going towards a computer lab.
Is she the manager?
What's that?
Is she the manager?
Yeah.
She had all the details. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so.
She need a raise.
Yes. Yeah, so please come to support.
Well, once again, guys, thank you so much.